This is totally cool. Jeffrey is back on the road giving public seminars. I love it. Jeffrey, you're in high demand, man. People are emailing asking when you're coming back, and you're back. If you've never been to Des Moines, now is the time to plan your visit. Jeffrey will be appearing live, delivering a seminar on leadership and a seminar on sales mastery on May 17th and May 18th. Go to cgittimer, segittimer.com, and get your ticket. And while you're there, get one for your entire team. We'll see you there.
And if you're from New York City, Des Moines is in Iowa.
One of our video ads that has done really well for us is we compare disruptive advertising to Tinder. All the other agencies are the ones you swiped left on, and we're the one you're finally going to swipe right on. And then we go through the progression of how we're going to make a bunch of money babies together.
What's Tinder? Wait. What's Tinder? Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls.
I'm tweeting that puppy.
Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, author of The Little Red Book of Selling. You are in Sell or Die. And my partner,
Jen Gluckow, founder of Sales in a New York Minute.
And I are going to infotain you for the next little while.
Infotain you. That's a new word. I love it, Jeffrey.
If you're watching this on video, it would be impossible because we're only recording it.
I don't know why we're not videoing today. I put makeup on.
Yeah. But the bottom line is you just want information that you can use, correct?
That's right. That's
Who's on the show today,
Turn
Jen?
Into money. We have an amazing guest coming up today. We have Jacob Badsgaard, founder of Disruptive Advertising, and he's going to be talking about founder selling. It's all about selling and transferring your message to your people. I don't want to give too many details away yet, but he is an amazing guest.
You know, it's funny. Disruptive advertising puts a first name in front of advertising that actually makes it potentially appealing.
Mm.
Because most of the time when you see advertising, it's either by itself or online advertising or AdWord advertising or something boring. Like
disruptive
boring
was
advertising.
A buzzword a few years ago, I feel like. It was
what?
Like
online?
Disruptive. Everything was disruptive. All of a sudden,
this
everything
is pretty good, though.
Maybe
I'm in a dark room someplace, but it's the first time I've ever seen it.
Oh, well, I don't know. In the industry I used to sell in, it was huge. But it's... This guy has amazing things to say.
Yeah, he does.
I'm really excited about the interview.
So stay tuned for that. Let me tell you what's going on in our world just a little bit. I'm on the road going to Des Moines, Iowa for the first time in about 5 years. Hashtag Jeffrey is back.
Hashtag Gittimer is back.
Oh, hashtag Gittimer is back. Sorry, wrong hashtag. Thank you.
Hashtag Gittimer is back. Right. It's not that you haven't been around, Jeffrey.
No.
You've been out there giving
I'll
seminars
take foreign
to
phrases
private...
for 100, Alex.
You've been out there giving private seminars to corporate clients all over the world in
the past few
years. You just haven't done a public seminar tour.
I did one in Italy.
And yes, you did.
Last summer.
Back in America.
Back in America. Yeah. That's right. Back in Hollywood Square Zone, US
of A. You know, it feels like it was yesterday when we went to that Italy thing, but I think it was like 2 or 3 years
two
ago.
Two summers ago.
Yeah.
That was one of the first projects that I worked with you guys on.
Oh wow.
Oh, cool.
Memories.
That was our producer.
So I'm going to be in Des Moines in May 17th and 18th. I'm going to be in Philadelphia June.
Well, we don't have a Philly date yet.
No, I'm sorry. I'm
going to
be in
Charlotte June 14th and 15th, and then you're going to Philly, Dallas, Atlanta, and Chicago.
So 6 dates are announced. That's it. If you live near those places, go. If you don't live near those places, they have airplanes now, and you can fly there and hang out for a little while.
A lot of people are flying into Des Moines on May 17th and 18th just to meet you, Jeffrey, which is really cool.
Yeah,
you know,
totally cool.
It's really cool. And so if you don't live in one of those cities, I'll say them again, Des Moines, Charlotte, Chicago, Philly, Dallas, or Atlanta, come fly in and come meet us.
With me.
Yeah.
And we're going to be discussing the economic boom that's happening right now. Most salespeople are experiencing an increase in sales and erroneously thinking that they had something to do with it. I'm going to explain, why it's happening and how you can take full advantage of it, not just this year, but for the next decade. That's what the theme of the meeting is going to be.
Yeah, and one of the cool things, of your public seminar.
Yeah, sales mastery now and for the next decade.
Cool. That is one you do not want to miss.
There's also one for leadership. If you're a sales manager, leader, vice president, owner, whatever, and you have salespeople working for you or with you, this is an event that will help you find them, hire them, train them, make them successful, and retain them.
Cool. Yeah, that's what every manager wants to know.
Well,
speaking about management and leadership, we're actually starting a book club.
Oh, cool.
And our first book is called Stop
Selling.
The Little
Red Book of Selling. Oh, wait, that's my book.
Our first book that we're all going to read together as diehards is Stop Selling, Start Leading.
Oh, cool.
And so, diehards, go get this book on Amazon.
Stop Selling, Start Leading.
That's right.
It's, just
go there.
There's
three authors, James Cousis, Barry Posner, and Deb Calvert.
Mm-hmm.
And they have combined their expertise in selling and in leadership to form this book. And it's pretty cool. We're going to be talking about it with the authors on April 26th. But go get your copy.
But
the big news now.
Yeah, the big news is that we're doing a Facebook Live book club discussion.
Ooh.
So the diehards out there, you can get involved with our book club. That discussion, mark your calendars, May 10th on facebook.com/Jeffrey Gittimer. But you have to buy the book. You got to read the book first.
That's right.
The essence of the talk is going to be around the new role of the salesperson as a leader.
Mm-hmm.
Because your responsibility is to be perceived by your customer as a leading salesperson and as a person who can make a difference in the company that they're trying to serve. And you'll find all that stuff out. But if I were you, I'd just buy the book, get a Kindle, get a hardbound, read as much of it.
We're going to put a link to the book in our show notes on sellerdiepodcast.com.
Mm-hmm.
And go
and you can
get
do
your
it. Now,
copy of the book.
What's going on? Do you have anything specific you want to talk about, Jen? Your new New York Minute looks pretty damn good.
Look really good. Go to YouTube and search for Sales in a New York Minute. You'll find my channel and all my New York Minutes.
No, the new one's really good. I mean, we're starting to get some production value into Jennifer's Minutes.
Yeah, and you'll see Steve. He's featured in the video.
Yeah.
Well, he featured himself.
Yeah.
And
that's the beauty of editing.
Yeah, the beauty of editing is you're also
and
in charge.
He's freaking hilarious.
Yeah,
like,
he
is really funny. I love it.
He's a stand-up comedian for a while.
Sales in a New York Minute game.
Yeah. Maybe we can get him at our party tonight. We're having a party over at, what's the name of the place?
Resident Culture. It's
Resident Culture here in Charlotte. It's a great, unbelievably great brewery.
There's about 40 breweries here, and I'm convinced it's the best one.
Yeah. And we're going to have, maybe we can get Steve to do a little bit of a stand-up.
Well, why don't you ask him?
Maybe. Well, and I think all of this, Jeffrey, highlights that you have created a certain culture here at this company that embraces creativity, it embraces fun, it embraces getting together. And all of that is reflected in the work that comes out from both you and Jennifer. And our guest today, Jacob Badsgaard, talks a lot about developing sales culture in this interview.
Wow, well, what a good segue, Doug. That is why you are our producer. I love that.
Doug, you can ding yourself on that one.
All right, let me introduce Jacob Badsgaard. He founded Disruptive Advertising in 2012, and he's grown the company to over 60 employees, and get this, $12 million in annual revenue in only 3.5 years. Here's the best part, with zero debt of outside funding.
I'm giving him applause.
That's freaking incredible, guys.
He makes almost as much money as we do.
So while most business leaders focus on personal financial gain, Jacob reinvests a fair amount of his profits back into his employees and the community, and we'll get into that in his interview.
He has a great philosophy, period.
He really does. He really does. He donates 10% of his salary to his church every month. And he spends upwards of $1,000 a week on snacks for the office.
Yum!
Yeah.
I love that.
Was that a sound effect or was that you, Doug?
That was me.
Was Doug.
Got it.
I think that was Doug.
That was an original.
But you know what? Snacks or no snacks, because
I'm a snacker.
I'd rather more money in my paycheck than free snacks.
Yeah.
I think this is the coolest part about Jacob. He spends time developing employees with no experience inter leadership roles within his company, and that they now earn six-figure salaries.
Wow.
Yeah.
Let's hear it.
Let's now. Hear it from Mr. Jacob Badsgard.
Can you just share with the audience how you started this business? What was the idea, the inspiration? How did it, you woke up one morning and you go, I'm doing this?
Yeah, you bet. The inspiration came from the job that I had before I started this. I was a web analytics consultant, was previously Omniture, now Adobe. And I would help Fortune 100 companies track how people got to their site, how they behaved, what they did when they left, and then actually tie that into their bottom line in revenue. And after doing that for a few years, what I kept finding a lot of wins with was on the PPC side, where I could use the data, identify big wins, they would make those changes, and we'd see a lot of improvement for those businesses. And so, that's
for our diehards out there, PPC, you mean pay-per-click?
Pay-per-click marketing, like Google, paid search, ads on Facebook, those types of things.
So like I would pick a word like salesmanship or public speaking or seminars or keynote addresses and pay for that if they would click on that in my bio or on our website, and we would pay $5 a word, $10 a word, whatever, correct?
Yeah, that's more or less how it works.
Keep going.
Yeah, so that's where I saw the opportunity. I saw that, hey, if the largest companies in the country and world don't know how to do this, nobody does, right? And so that's where I saw that most companies lack the bandwidth or expertise to actually use analytics to drive growth in their businesses using digital marketing. And so that was where I saw my opportunity and eventually jumped on that.
And what was the day? Come on, give me the defining moment when you said, I'm doing this.
The defining moment was September of 2013, which I had formally quit my full-time job and decided to lease an office space before I probably should have, and went for it. Hired a couple of people, and that was in September of 2013.
Were you scared?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
But actually, what you did, and you can probably equate this back to who you are as a person, you took a leap of faith.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it was. Now I'm not the riskiest guy. That might sound weird given what we just talked about, but I did take the time to build up a small portfolio of clients that I was working with. Did put my family into a good situation where I didn't need to make an income for a little while if it didn't go well. So tried not to take more risk than I really needed to. I'm a big believer in it's good to be hungry, but if you're starving, you might make compromised decisions. And so that's I'm a big believer in that.
That's a good
tweet.
I like
that concept. Yeah, that's a great – you should tweet that.
All right, I will.
Because if you don't, we're going to.
Okay, so you've built this business with no debt, no outside funding. That's incredible. How are some of the ways you've been able to grow and get new clients so that you didn't need to take on the extra funding?
Yeah, you bet. There is really two numbers that matter for any business, and that is what is a customer worth and how much can I afford to pay to get a new customer, right? Mm-hmm. And so initially, when the funds were not there to invest in a lot of marketing channels, I just went and hustled. I went to every networking event I could go to. I spoke at things that I had the opportunity to speak at, exaggerating my credentials a little bit to try and get in.
Really? Wait a minute, really?
So those are the types of things that I did early on to get clients in and then leveraging my personal network. The reality is that only ever gets you so far with a business, right? That can turn it into a lifestyle business that may or may not have sustainability.
I agree.
Yep.
I agree.
And so eventually, after about a year of doing that and getting enough traction, I started to invest a lot of our extra funds that were being generated into the type of marketing campaigns that we help our clients with.
So in other words, you're eating your own dog food.
Oh, absolutely. Cool. And I think it's pretty delicious. It's protein packed, man.
Perfect. Keep going.
So yeah, that's what we did is we've just identified marketing channels where we've been able to identify businesses that are looking for help to grow, to get help with Google AdWords or Facebook ads that either don't know how to do it at all or are doing it and aren't getting good results. To date, we've actually, with our software tool, we've actually measured 4,000 businesses' AdWords accounts performance. And that's where that number comes from, is that on average, 76% is completely wasted. And so
wow.
a lot of the demand comes from
myself, but okay. I use 74%
for everything. 76%. We can either help you spend less and get the same results or spend the same amount and get 2 to 3 times the results from that. And so that's the type of results that we've been able to drive. And so that brings a lot of business to us in addition to the marketing that we do for ourselves.
Have you done a special category? Have you identified the 5 major categories to businesses that are most likely to hire you through your own research?
Yes, actually we have. We work with a lot of e-commerce businesses, companies that sell products online. Mm-hmm. Typically those that have a good amount of products and SKUs and a decent average order value in terms of what they're selling and what they have. And then we work with a lot of B2B tech companies or B2B services. We've actually had a lot of marketing agencies hire us to do their marketing for them.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And have you done any research on us?
I have a feeling we're on his targeted client list.
Come on,
but
Jacob.
That's why he reached out.
That's why we're talking today, man.
Yeah, no. I have a feeling.
This is a sales call. I love this.
He's trying to sell us.
And then we've got a couple of other categories, home services, like, you know, your local plumber, roofers, pest control, dentists, those types of things. We work with a lot of those types of businesses as well. As you might imagine, someone hops on Google and looks for a plumber near me. That's a good time to put an ad in front of them.
So our personal plumber.
You're correct.
Our personal plumber is the only 5-star rated plumber on Google in the Charlotte area.
Metropolitan area, yeah.
And when you Google him, when you Google Charlotte Plumber, his company comes up first with so many 5-star reviews. It's incredible. That's how we found him.
Because his company's name is Charlotte Plumbing.
It is. But a lot of the other plumbers don't have all 5-star reviews. He can say he has all 100% 5-star reviews. It's pretty cool.
That's pretty unique.
Their slogan is we're fast, we're competent, no butt cracks.
Jeffrey, we have a lot of seller diehards who do international business.
And when you do business away from the United States of America, you got to be prepared because it's different cultures. That's why we've partnered with Dr. Greg Story. He is the president of Dale Carnegie Japan and the author of a new book called Japan Sales Mastery to help solve the mystery of making sales in Japan.
Yeah, and Dale Carnegie Training Japan is the leading soft skills training company in Japan, covering sales training, leadership, communication, and presentation skills.
Dr. Greg Story has been selling in Japan for the past 30 years, and now you can enjoy his daily articles on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter.
Not only that, but every week he releases 3 podcasts on business. And on his YouTube, he broadcasts his cutting-edge Japan business show. Check the show notes for all the links.
So if you're doing any business in Japan and you don't really know what you're doing, then you need to get Japan Sales Mastery by Dr. Greg Story. He's the president of Dale Carnegie Training in Japan, and it's on Amazon.com, of course. And subscribe to his podcast, the Sales Japan Series. It's free wherever you get your podcasts. Go do it.
So let's talk about your business philosophy. You take in or take on people who are inexperienced and turn them into successful leaders within your company. And it seems like you're investing a lot of time and energy and effort into these people to take them on from, you know, starting out salaries to 6-figure salaries. What do you do to help them grow?
Yeah, couple of different departments in the company. We're getting close to 100 people over here now, and so it's a little different in each division. Let me tell you what I did wrong first, and then I'll tell you what I learned from it.
Cool.
That's the best.
We love that.
So one of the biggest challenges with any business is to move past founder-based selling, because it makes sense that I'm good at selling it, and people want to buy when I'm the one pitching it to them, right? Because I'm good at it, and I'm good at selling it, and moving past that
How
is something
humble.
That most businesses really struggle with.
How humble.
But true.
But true. But true.
Yeah.
And so what I tried to do was hire a couple of experienced salespeople to come in and just take it off of my plate, right? And so I tried that. I hired them. And the reality was, while they may have been good at selling something else, they had their way of doing things. They didn't completely understand the business model. And because I was paying them lots of money, my expectations were very high for them to turn results very quickly. And needless to say, those just did not work out. And what I found was, our sales, finally, I was able to move past doing all of the sales myself to, I just got a couple of young guys and said, look, I'm actually going to close business for you. You're just going to listen to everything I do. You're going to help make sure I follow up on everything, but I'm going to give you the commission for everything I close. And you're just going to listen to me for 3 months. Right. And so they just came along, they did that. And then a little bit, it took about a year to get them up to speed and about 18 months before they were top performers. But, you know, my head of sales now is, you know, he's only 26, 27 years old, and he closes deals like Scott's Miracle-Gro. He goes and he's this enterprise guy with an interesting beard, and he just performs really well. And what I realized is there was just no shortcuts. I needed to just take the time to train someone. And a lot of the times it's easier to do that and have better expectations of them when they're not an incredibly expensive resource right out of the gate. And so, you know, that's one situation on the sales team that's worked incredibly well for us. And we've been able to replicate that. We've now got a team of about 10 people on the sales side. And I'm very rarely involved in any of that anymore, which is awesome. I mean, that was a big moment for our company, was to move into that.
So you went from founder-based selling and helped people develop a founder-based mentality by actually teaching them how to do what you did. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. That's exactly what happened. And then on the fulfillment side of our business, those that actually execute, implement, and work with our clients, is we've just taken a lot of time, energy, and resources to build out a career map for them. Hey, here's how you progress and grow within the company. And once people know what they need to do, it's amazing what they can pull out and make happen. But if they don't know what's expected to take it to the next level, get an increase in my base or increase in my bonus, people just flounder and don't really know what to do. And so every department in our company has a very strong performance component and a very well-defined, hey, and this is what we're looking for in order for you to grow and progress so that you can make what you want to make. And we've got people that come through an internship at 10 bucks an hour to making six figures within, now it's not common, but we've had people do that in 18 months. Most of the time it takes people, you know, longer than that, but that's the kind of performance that we've seen from people.
Jacob, what did you learn from training your first few salespeople?
Well, I think the big lesson learned was I can't just expect someone to understand how to sell it the way that I do, or to understand it the way that I do, or to care as much as I do. And so that was probably my biggest lesson learned, was take the time, be hands-on, and see the things that I want to see demonstrated consistently before I let go. And so that was, you know, I would say high level, that's what I learned there.
And does Google help you when you try to sell an AdWord? Do they come in and help you with your analytics? Do they show you paths to go down, or do you just go in and do it yourself?
Well, Google does provide limited support to people that use the platform directly without using an agency like ourselves. Google has about 3,000 agency partners in the Americas in terms of agencies that help clients or businesses advertise on Google. We're in their top 1% of those groups. And so they actually provide us resources, manpower, support in the sales process and supporting our clients that are working with us. And so we're kind of BFFs with Google. In fact, they're actually flying our whole executive team down next week to do some training and figure out how we can continue to grow together.
I'm fascinated by how much you invested in your salespeople to get them up and running, because most founders have a hard time taking the time to invest in them. So how did you see, you explained you did it wrong initially, but how did you come up with this method of, I'm going to keep these people on board for the next year and they don't have to close a single thing. I'm going to do it for them and pay them the commission. Where did that come from?
I think it came from desperation of having failed and saying, I got to try this and see how this goes. Obviously, if there was an improvement in progress in that time period, I probably wouldn't have just stuck it out for a year to hope and
get
it worked out.
You read the book. Now what the hell do I do?
But what's interesting is I didn't have a training program, right? Mm-hmm. So I said, I am the training program. Just be with me. But now it takes a lot less time for people to get up to speed because, of course, those things have been put in place now.
So now you invest in your employees, not just in their training, but in their charities. How does that affect your culture?
You know, twice a month, we send out a survey to the entire company that says, hey, what's going on with people you know in your community, things that we can do to help out. And so people just submit that. There is a committee in our organization that reviews those, works within the budget constraints that we have to identify, hey, what do we want to do? What do we have the resources to help with? And what we've tried to do a good job of is whoever submits the idea, once it gets approved, we actually want them to champion it.
That's right? Cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why we're cool. They'll go out and bring the check.
And a lot of the times we'd want to make a financial contribution, but we want to do more than that because I think that it's hard to feel that level of investment if it's just a check every time that we're giving to people.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so, for example, we've got this one that we did just this last month was someone that had a mother who's now a single mother because her husband had passed away, some very challenging things that had gone on. And so we just put together a pretty cool way of presenting to her, hey, we just got you and your daughter plane tickets and a week at Disneyland. And we know you're going through a hard time, but there's a lot of people that love you and care about you.
Wow.
Right. So the person that submitted that idea was the one that was able to go and present that to her.
That's cool.
And I think that changes not just their lives, but a lot of people's lives in those kind of interactions.
Sure.
That's awesome.
That you are giving people what they would consider when they receive it, the miracle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is I'm pretty transparent. Everyone in the company knows not just where our revenue is at, but how much margin we're making as a company and that we choose to take a portion of that margin and invest it in things that they personally care about as well. And so I think that that's something that people just enjoy about, hey, I know what's going on with the business and I know that, yeah, Jacob's doing well, but I know that a lot of the profits are being used for things that I personally care about as well. And I'm excited about that.
I would like to switch subjects for just a minute. Can you talk to me and Jen and our entire audience of diehards? What the hell is disruptive advertising?
Yeah, disruptive advertising is we are a specialized agency, and we work with companies to help them hit their growth goals. And the way that we do that is we help companies advertise on Google, Facebook, and then we also have a team of designers and testers that helps our clients test and optimize their website to say, how do we get 3 out of 100 or 5 out of 100 coming to our website that buys or fills out the form or whatever to 10 or 15 out of 100, right?
What's disruptive about it though? Where's the thing that you're doing that the other guy is not doing that pisses them off because they're not doing it and you are?
Yeah, is disruptive advertising different from
ruptive.
Normal ruptive advertising? Yeah, exactly.
Well, like I mentioned, we've 76% of budgets on average are wasted. And our methodology, while it may not be crazy and flashy, what it does is it allows our clients to spend less than their competition and severely outperform them. That is what makes our solution disruptive.
That's a good definition of it.
Big announcement. Major. We're starting a book club. We are starting a book club, and believe me, we know great books.
That's correct. We write them. We read them. We stock them in our libraries. Our first great book is Stop Selling and Start Leading, How to Make Extraordinary or Extraordinary Sales Happen by James Kouzes, Barry Posner, and Deb Calvert.
And here's the deal, guys. We want you to be a part of this book club as well. So we're going to have a live book club discussion on Facebook in May, but you have to buy the book so that you can chat with us. There's a link to get the book right there in the show notes.
So this is my recommendation. Buy the book. Did I mention buy the book? It's called Stop Selling and Start Leading. Read the book And we will see you in May, Facebook Live, discussing the book. And there'll be other things that will help you implement this book into your life. It's all about, as a salesperson, what is your responsibility as a leader in the new economy? Rock the house. But do you do things like, do you target your competition so that when a customer goes on your competitor's site that all of a sudden your ad pops up, and that can really piss off your competitor, right?
Yeah, you know, we don't do that personally from
Come on.
We've played around with that in the past. Yeah. But, you know, we have some clients that makes sense and we do that for. It just depends on the circumstances. But usually it's kind of a zero-sum game at that point, because if everyone starts doing that, it's, you know, it kind of is what it is. Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
So what are some of the other forms of disruption that you've used besides saving people half of their money or 76% of their money?
Well, I think this might be a different answer than you're expecting, but one of the things that really drove me to start the business is I felt like if I work X hard, I can get paid X amount. And if I work 2X as hard, I'm still going to get paid 1X the amount in corporate America. And that was the thing that ultimately led me to start my own business is, hey, just compensate me based on my performance and let me go, right?
Yep.
And so one of the things that I think that truly makes us disruptive is we have developed our culture around not penalizing top performers, so that if you produce at 2X, you get paid at 2X. And I don't care if you've been here 3 months or 3 years, your performance is what dictates that. And so that's the kind of people we attract. People grow very quickly. And really what I think one of our biggest differentiators are, our clients are working with the employees of Disruptive that love being here and are growing right alongside with their clients in their own professional career.
Mm.
Is your business card disruptive? Is your own marketing disruptive? Do you put out a disruptive message, or do you try to look corporate traditional?
You know, we play around with a little bit of all of it. One of our video ads that has done really well for us is we compare disruptive advertising to Tinder. We're all the other agencies are the ones you've swiped left on, and we're the one you're finally going to swipe right on. And then we go through the progression of how we're going to make a bunch of money babies together.
What's Tinder? Wait. What's Tinder?
Tinder's a dating app.
I know
app.
What it is.
Oh, okay.
So we definitely love to push the envelope with those types of things.
Money babies. I like that.
If you like me and you like our ads, swipe right. That's funny. That's totally funny.
Oh, man.
Amazing? The meme that Tinder has created is
the swiping left or swiping right.
Yeah. You know, I don't like you. You're out. Left. Mm-hmm. I like you. Swipe right. And Jacob has taken this to the next level.
Well, now I'm wondering what kind of advertising would Jacob swipe left on?
Right.
What kind of advertising out there do you see and go, I'm not really, yeah. I don't think this is on trend. I don't really like this.
Here's the thing. I find that a lot of people, you know, coming back to that same point, a lot of money is wasted.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the things that I see, the swiping left on that I see happening in the advertising world where waste occurs is most people still treat digital like a media buy. Hey, we're just going to spend X amount on digital.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Hold on 1 second. Not only is a media buy, but through a traditional agency.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't know a Facebook page of their own if they fell over it, or they have 928 Twitter followers.
Right.
That's not the guy I want to do business with.
Not at all. And here's a contrasting approach. Hey, we're going to spend $10,000 on Facebook. So we select a generic audience and we spend $10,000. And most businesses say, hey, I'm not generating any return for my Facebook ads, which is what most tell me, right? Versus this approach, the clients that are most likely to buy from you are who? It's the people that have already bought from you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can just export all of the people that have ever bought from your business before, upload that list into Google and Facebook, and target them and them only, and get you repeat purchases. And you might spend pennies on the dollar to do that, and the return is dramatically different, right?
Hmm.
And so what I swipe left on the things that I don't like are stop wasting money and approaching digital. You can get so targeted. There's no reason to waste that much money on digital.
I'm curious, yeah. Jacob, your thoughts on some of the recent developments in basically trying to find return on investment and putting videos on Facebook and trying to get some ad revenue going there. We had the recent news that Vox Media is laying off a lot of their division that was created to create, you know, social media videos and Facebook videos that were supposed to generate ad revenue and just didn't. And a lot of that had to do with Facebook and their metrics not matching up completely. I'd be interested in your thoughts on that development in the digital ad space.
Yeah. You know, at the end of the day, to trust one platform's information that they're providing you is typically, I would not recommend that anyway, right? That ad revenue and those clicks and things being generated from a Facebook platform, I think you should have a third party tracking system in place as well, so that you're not just believing what Google's or Facebook is telling you, but you've actually got the ability to track and measure that yourself as well, so that you're not getting blindsided. Because sometimes, you know, Facebook's figuring some things out, but a lot of the times it's because people just don't set up tracking correctly, is a big part.
How do you break through the noise? There's so much advertising, especially digitally right now. Everywhere I go, I go to a news site and I see ads for a training program I may have looked at once, or I turn on my phone. Everywhere I go, there's ads. So how do you disrupt the marketplace and break through the noise?
There is a lot of noise, and there is a lot of what we refer to as ad blindness, right?
Mm-hmm. People just don't ask, I like that.
And so here's the reason why. You know, if I'm a 25-year-old woman and I'm scrolling through my Facebook feed and I see a product for a 50-year-old man, and I'll leave it up to your imagination what you
hey,
want. Why would you want to engage with that ad?
Mm-hmm. You wouldn't.
So, I mean, you get the point. The point is, get the right ad in front of the right people. And guess what? They do engage because you're giving them something that they want to see and something that they need. Right. And so, again, that brings us back to the same points that we've already made. Stop treating it like a media buy and sticking a billboard. It's like putting a billboard up on the freeway. Yeah, maybe 5% of the people seeing that are actually the exact people you want to see it, but the other 95% are not. Mm-hmm. You don't need to do that on Google or Facebook anymore. You can get it so refined and get your messaging so dialed in that you're not, A, wasting the money for other people to see it that don't need to see it. And then B, you just got to quickly iterate on that, because you can't push the same message to someone on Facebook for a month in a row, mm-hmm. right? You need to kind of change it up and see what they're willing to engage and buy from. And so we iterate quickly, and you just got to nail down that targeting, because there's no reason to waste as much as happening online right now.
Cool. Well, I'm going to tell you that we normally will interview somebody for 20 minutes. Yeah. You're at 34, and we could talk to you for another week. You've been very successful at a business that is damn hard to be successful at. Mm-hmm. You have convinced a lot of people to spend a lot of money with you, and when you get the money, you're actually benevolent with it.
Yeah.
And you should be applauded for what you do, and you should be applauded for the way you do it.
So, how do our diehards find you online besides the ads you're going to be targeting?
com.
That's it. Just go to disruptiveadvertising.com. And we actually did set up a page for anyone that's listening. If you go to disruptiveadvertising.com/audit, we will use our technology for free and audit any of the account or ads that you've run on Google or Facebook to date, and we can tell you exactly what you did right or exactly what you did wrong. And you can either fix it yourself, or you can use a group like us to right the ship.
I thought that that interview was compelling and intellectually stimulating in a way that I have not been stimulated in a long time from a business perspective.
Well, we know what show is going to make the best of.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. But when he said founder-based selling, I immediately thought, A, it's a book title, and B, it's what I do.
Jeffrey, you think in book titles.
That's correct.
I love it.
I'm fairly certain that you mumble book titles in your sleep.
Yeah. Well, no, but, well, all right, yeah. Okay, but then the thought occurred to me that he had to transfer his founder-based selling capability and instill a founder-based mentality in the person who was doing the selling so they could carry his torch.
And that is such a hard thing to do.
It's damn near impossible.
Why is it hard?
Because people won't take ownership. They'll only take a job.
Well, no, why is it hard to give up that founder-based
selling? That's a different question that I thought you were asking. It's hard because you're scared that they're not going to
produce.
Create the sales that you're producing, right. Number one. But he got rid of that fear by saying, oh, I'm just going to sell and you take the commission. What salesperson wouldn't like that? And then they get to learn.
Exactly. From my perspective, it was slightly different because I had to go to deliver a speech and they can't actually go do deliver the speech. But now with the online academy, we can easily transfer that mentality to somebody else who can pick up the baton and go with it.
Another reason it's hard, in my opinion, is that you have a set of principles that you've been living and breathing for the past however many years.
Yeah,
I don't
most of them are legal.
Announce your age, but however many years, right?
72.
And now you have a salesperson who has a different set, not a wrong set, but a different set of principles.
Yep.
And what you want is for your salespeople to have the same principles.
Correct.
Because that's what this company is, right?
What's created the attraction.
Right.
Okay.
And so how do you instill those beliefs, those principles into someone? First, you have to teach them what they are. And then they have to learn, and then they have to say, yes, I agree with those principles, and I'm willing to take them on as part of my beliefs. And then they can transfer what they're doing. If they don't have that, they can't.
I defined it early when we started the advisor program of you have to speak fluent Jeffrey.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can speak fluent Jeffrey, that means that you understand the principles and you're willing to espouse them in a way where you can convince other people. That's the whole deal.
Transfer the message.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's for your company or any company with a salesperson. I mean, it all starts somewhere with some core belief and some principle. When I was working with an educational software company, one of the things I really tried to understand from day one was, why did the founders start this business?
Mm-hmm.
What was their passion? Because if I could transfer their why to the customer, and it was a very nice business where we were helping kids get more education,
mm-hmm.
Then that would help bring A, my belief system to the right place, but B, allow me to transfer that message to the customer. And that was one of the things I just naturally focused on from the beginning. And that's one of the things that sales managers have to instill in their salespeople.
And here's a question I know that a lot of sales managers that are listening to this podcast are probably asking right now, which is, how do I know when the message has been successfully transferred? Because it's not like an ATM. It's not like, okay, here's your money, here's your balance.
Exactly, yeah. Here's your little piece of paper.
Right.
I think that the founders saw an opening in a marketplace, had the knowledge, the expertise, and had the belief that they could do something with it. And that's what begins the process. I know that's how it happened for me. Like, I knew I could do this. I knew people needed it. And I saw that there was an opening in the marketplace. So that's the first part of the process. But the second part is you have to consistently, literally live with your people in an office environment in order to be able to transfer that message. They have to know who you are as a person. You can't be aloof. You can't be distant. You can't have your door shut. There has to be an openness about it that allows that sort of camaraderie to rub off on the other person.
You can tell easily when it's not there.
Oh, yeah.
You can tell when you're listening to a salesperson give a pitch and they're, let's say, your mentality is, you know, family-based business. We're trying to help you as if you're our family. And they're being salesy rather than helpful. You know you haven't transferred that message.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's
so correct. It's much easier to tell when you haven't yet transferred that message than when it's fully there. But when it's fully there, you know it just clicks because they're making decisions and answering questions in a way that you would answer them.
Okay, so I agree with that. I think that there certainly is an ability for the founder or the owner or the person who's running the company to be able to transfer their message literally by being there and serving as an example or setting a standard that everybody else can identify with and live with. You know, we have our Monday morning meetings, and those, I think, go a long way towards putting everybody not only on the same team, but on the same path, the same pathway.
Yeah. I also, though, for sales managers, giving the demo in front of your salesperson is key. And most salespeople get their job and then they just have to go pitch. They get a little bit of training and then they're, boom, sent out there into the world.
Yeah, let the manager be the person that carries the ball.
Like, show them what to do for the first couple of weeks so that they really know what to do, what to say, how to answer questions. And then once they're answering questions on their own, you need to be able to provide feedback. You need to know what those questions are. You need to be able to provide feedback so that you can help them.
So you're a coach and a teacher and a trainer at the same time, not a manager.
Yeah. And this interview, in my mind, was really about ownership, that he, you know, he took, Jacob had an ownership over selling as a founder that he had to give up, but he replaced that ownership with ownership of the culture, of the sales culture. And that's what managers often have to do. They have to give up that selling mentality for a culture mentality. But then the salespeople also have to own that, they get handed down the selling responsibilities and they have to own that.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
But I want to take this further, because you hear an interview like this, you get inspired by it, and this young man has become very successful in his niche. And how did that happen? And the answer is that Jacob erroneously thinks that he played a major role in making that happen. You know, the real estate agents right now, they can't find enough houses. And they, because they're selling houses like hotcakes, they think that they had something to do with that. They did not. Amazon is one of the most successful companies in the world right now, maybe the most successful company in the world right now. And they didn't have 100% of anything to do with that. They had a lot to do with it, but not all. And let me explain what I mean by that. When the internet first started, no one had acceptance of it. Everyone had skepticism of it. But the people who were greedy had all kinds of ideals, and they're going to invest in these dot-com companies because that's the next new thing, and they all went bust. Well, they mostly went bust. Apple didn't quite go bust. Amazon didn't quite go bust. Microsoft didn't quite go bust. And now they're the, you know, Google didn't quite go bust. They're the predominant players. But you can look at the companies that did go bust, and there's a ton of them who went bust, who had online software, who had all kinds of stuff, and they're just not there anymore. So they couldn't quite make it. And one of the reasons, if you look at e-commerce as an example, when you went online and you had your AOL account, you had a banner ad.
You've got mail.
Right. You've got mail. No one clicked on the banner ad. They were the biggest waste of time and money
on
the planet.
And you thought it might take you to like a virus page.
Exactly. And you thought it might catch on fire.
Yeah.
And so that went away. And so did AOL, by the way. AOL went away because they didn't sophisticate well enough. But as the marketplace sophisticated, it gained acceptance. And if you look at what advertising is online right now, it has finally gained acceptance. We are in what I'm referring to as the age of acceptance. Mm-hmm. When you go to Zappos, you know that you're going to get your pair of shoes. It's going to come with a return slip. If the shoes don't fit, you're going to send them back and you're going to get the next half size up so it does fit. And you're going to have that happen in a week. And they'll FedEx your first order.
Or like 2 days now. Hey, well, it's crazy.
Right. Whatever it is, you're going to get it returned and it's accepted. No one calls you up on the phone and goes, okay, well, that wasn't acceptable.
Yeah.
You're out of warranty. And you get it all the time when you go to a retail store. Mm-hmm. I don't want an argument. I just want a box. So the age of acceptance has come because of sophistication. Your credit card is online. You click with one buy. You have pictures of everything. And you can see it from every angle. And you get it delivered in 2 days or maybe even one day. And we're there. And so the ads have become acceptable to a point now where we will click on them. We as people will click on those ads and make a buy. You do it on Instagram. Have you ever bought anything from an Instagram ad?
I don't need to, because you buy everything from Instagram ads.
I buy.
Literally, things show up at our house. I'm like, where'd you get this? And Jeffrey's like, oh, on Instagram.
Right.
No, Instagram doesn't sell stuff. What do you mean you got it on Instagram? It was an ad. I needed it. And they, I'm like, oh, they have really good targeting for you, Jeffrey.
They do. They know. They got my ass in a sling. They know it, and they love it.
Because that scissor that cuts vegetables, we have always needed one of those. Right,
exactly. And and the thing that measures picture frames coming down from the wall.
Oh, yeah, with two. Not just one. We got two.
I got one for my toolbox and one for but listen.
Yeah, when Jeffrey says sophistication, that really does mean we're in the age of targeting. We're in the age of being able to have the ability to whittle down our audiences to people that we almost know will buy.
I was just about to get to that, Doug. It's sophisticated and it's targeted. So what happens is we accept that ad. We don't ignore that ad anymore because we have confidence in the internet and we have confidence in the seller. We didn't always have that confidence in the internet. And now that the confidence is there, when you see something you like, you click.
Mm-hmm.
And what this kid has done is he has sophisticated his own targeting to an audience that is receptive to it. It's not like, oh, it's an internet ad. It may catch on fire. I may not click on this. It's going to take me to some kind of spam or some kind of a virus or some kind of – no. I'll click right away.
What I hear you saying is that Jacob is in the right place at the right time with the right product.
Exactly, and he's swiping right.
That's right.
So let's turn that back to salespeople right now who are trying to find people who are willing to buy. How do they target? And I'm not talking about Facebook ads. I'm not talking about Google ads. I mean, how do they on the ground target?
So with Google ads and Facebook ads, there is so much data that goes into that algorithm about how old you are, where you live, what you bought last. Even if you have Gmail, they're collecting data on you.
Right.
And they're learning so much about you that they can target. As a salesperson, you may not be able to get that data as easily as Google, but you need to try to get as much information about your potential customer. And the best way to do that is go visit some of your current customers and put together a list of who they are, what they like. I mean, we did this exercise once where we put together our buyer personas. You know, there's someone who's a 50-year-old sales manager who likes golf, who likes fine wine, who likes to travel, who are your buyers? And you have to outline that so that you can really go after the right buyers. Otherwise, you're going to be wasting your time 76% of the time too.
Let me take it to another level, Jen. If I had a sales force of 10 people right now and I had to train them all, the first thing I would do is go to customers that are currently using my stuff and make them spend somewhere between a day and a week at that customer's place of business or different customers' places of business to find out one thing. Why did they buy? When I find out why they buy, I want to find out the next thing, how they use. And the third thing I want to find out is what's the outcome of use and would they recommend this? So I'm going to go and find out why they bought, how they use, what's the outcome, would they recommend? You cannot get that in a classroom right now. There's no way you can understand that in any kind of a training classroom. Don't offer training that's not valid and valuable to somebody that's a new salesperson to find out why.
Mm-hmm.
And so you look at that from a salesperson's perspective, you have to be your own data gathering resource. You have to be your own
Correct.
Google.
Correct.
You have to be, you know, they have to go out and hands-on find out the information, Doug, and they have to do it in a way that makes them understand what it is that they're trying to accomplish.
Be your own Google.
Well, there's another lesson that we can take from Facebook and all of these social media platforms if you look over the history of them. They became our friends first, and they asked us all of these. They asked us all of these questions first before they tried to sell us things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed.
They gathered all of 100%. That information by making us or by allowing
by having us trust them.
Yeah, by allowing us to fill out profiles and different mm-hmm. things, and then they tried to sell us things.
Listen, you know, everyone uses Gmail or uses, you know,
most people use Gmail. Yeah.
Why?
You think they're not reading your emails?
It's free. No, it's free. And people said, let me take advantage of this. And now you pay $5 a month for this if it's a business account or whatever. But they didn't. That wasn't like that in the beginning. Everything was free. So mm-hmm. Google invested in their customers' gratification, not satisfaction. gratification.
So there's one more thing I want to talk about
right.
that Jacob mentioned, and he invests a lot in his people in terms of talent and mm-hmm. training, mm-hmm. but he also invests monetarily in their charities. And there's this big thought out there that a lot of founders have about whether your employees would rather have more money in their pockets, personal pockets, or an investment in something they're interested in, like charities and whatnot, or snacks in the snack room or a game room and stuff like that. What do you think, Jeffrey? Because we didn't get to ask Jacob this, but what do you think employees would rather have?
Money.
I don't know.
Well, I think, first of all, if you maximize their money, then you can start to give it away. If you don't maximize their money, you can't give it away. They're going to go, what are you giving that away for? I want it.
That's a good point, because Jacob also said that he paid 2x money for mm-hmm. 2x performance. So that's yeah. got to be step one. And then step two, the auxiliary. He's, and I know someone's saying, well, yeah, but you got to make a lot of money to do that too. Like,
yeah, I mean, I'd rather have the money, because then I can give it to any charity I want.
He has the right formula. And I think he's executed it properly. And he has his people at a level where they feel okay about their revenue. Now I can give it away. But he's smart enough to say, oh, this is your charity? You go give it away.
Right. There's a certain emotion that brings, and additional dedication that brings for the employee to his company when they get to do that. That makes not just their day, but that makes their month. That's something they're talking about for weeks afterwards. You know, someone was, yeah. my coworker was sick, and I got to give her this.
Yeah, exactly. You know, somebody in the community.
I think it's brilliant.
The charitable actions that you take never leave your memory.
Mm-hmm.
Ever, ever leave your memory. You mm-hmm. can think about anybody who, if you're a diehard and you're listening right now, I guarantee you can think about all the random acts of kindness or the charitable acts of kindness that you did in your life, and you can recall right now in a piece, if I said name the 10 things that you did or the 5 things that you did, you could list them in 2 seconds.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
I mean, I know I can.
Mm-hmm.
And when at 7 years old for me, I went to the grocery store. I bought candy bars for a nickel, and I sold them for a dime, and I gave all the money to charity.
Aww.
It was the Betty Bacharach home because we knew a family that had a kid that was in this, it was like for polio and, you know, crippling diseases. And they were right down the street in Atlantic City, and I went with a bunch of change and a few dollar bills, and I gave all the money away. The thing I didn't understand is you're supposed to keep some so you can reinvest in the charity. But I had the right idea.
Yeah.
It felt good to give it away. And here it is 60 some years later, and I still remember it like it was yesterday.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's cool. All right. Well, we have to wrap up.
Yeah, we got to go.
But before we go, I just want to throw out a nice shout out to our sponsors, Death Wish Coffee. They're
yep.
made from the world's most perfectly roasted beans.
And we had 2 cups while we were speaking.
Literally.
So just so people understand, Jen goes, wait, we need more coffee.
I think we're almost out, but
yeah.
we'll get a new delivery this
yeah.
week. So all you need to do to get your bag of the world's best coffee on the planet is go to deathwishcoffee.com and subscribe. If you don't believe us, just order a bag.
Yeah,
it's
just
so freaking good.
Let me explain something. You need to get hooked. And they know that you one little bag, and I'm talking coffee bags now, by the way, if you live in Colorado or California. Everyone wants great coffee, and the difference between good coffee and great coffee is like a dollar. So go spend the extra dollar.
I get so excited when I get to open that box.
Yeah, exactly.
Get a new trinket from Death Wish Coffee.
Yeah,
and hopefully you're hooked to this show as well, and you're subscribed to us on Stitcher, Overcast, iTunes, wherever you get podcasts. You can just search Sell or Die and hook a friend. Tell someone, just don't tell your competition.
Yeah, tell
That's
both your
right.
friends.
Tell your friends.
This is something that this show is becoming accepted now, and we are getting sophisticated. And just like the internet, we're going to get bought. And I think that
No, we're not for sale.
No, but you can sponsor us.
That's right.
And,
you can sponsor us.
And I think that we're in a situation now where podcasting has become wildly accepted.
Mm-hmm.
People are doing podcasts on every imaginable, you know, how to make a clay pot, how to, you know, you name it. There's all kinds of podcasts. How to bury your pet budgie.
Well,
and
I don't know what podcast that is.
But it probably exists somewhere. But all of that is in large part due to our amazing producer, Mr. Doug Branson, the man behind the curtains.
Unbelievable.
So thank you,
he's
Doug.
The voice of God, comes out of the blue every once in a while with something brilliant.
Yep.
And our guests today were amazing. We've done a couple of podcast interviews, but wait till you see who we've got coming. Stay tuned for more Death Wish Coffee and more Sell or Die podcasts.
Until next time.
Oh, yeah.
I'm Jen Gluckow.
And I'm Jeffrey Gittimer. And I'm reminding you to get out there and sell something, even if your ass falls off.